Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with Life Coach Cindy Chavez. Today is Wednesday, December the 18th, 2019. Just a few days left in 2019. It's 4 p.m. New York time. Wherever you are in the world, thank you for joining us for another episode of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy. And Cindy, I got to tell you, today I need a daily dose of happy. I'm glad it's Neville Day, but I've been... The nose has been to the grindstone, which is not what we teach here on LOA Today. We normally teach about just feeling and vibration and so forth. But sometimes you actually have to go do the work, too. And that's what I've been doing lately. And I, as I told you before the show, I used to do programming. I got away from it. Now I'm doing programming again. And I'd almost forgotten just how left-brained it is. I mean, you're just completely shoved over into that part of your mind.
Right.
And then you come in here and you do this big shift to the right. It's very disorienting. So if I'm saying something that doesn't make sense, just kind of raise your hand, interrupt me or something, you know, so we can get through it. But I'm sure I'll be fine. Just give me 5 minutes to wake up and I'll be fine.
Well, you know, we talk a lot about feelings, and especially with Neville, right, assuming the feeling.
Right.
And emotions are all right brain. So... You know, I remember reading something, and I can't remember who said it, but it made me laugh out loud because it was talking about that women have a lot more connections in the corpus callosum. So from left brain to right brain, a lot more connections than men, just physically, brain-wise. And so that is why it's easier sometimes for women to be multitasking, and some of it's emotional, like a baby on the hip and stirring a pot and talking on the phone and working out things. But the piece I was reading said, but don't ask a man that's emptying the dishwasher to what he thinks about the beauty of the snow falling outside the window, right? Because two different parts of the brain.
I do well with that. I mean, if I'm doing dishes and I'm chatting with Louise about something, I'm actually pretty good tapping into the emotions at that point. It's when I'm having to figure out step A to step B to step C to step C. That's when I have trouble.
Well, so this is like when you're in that deep dive in the left brain stuff, and then you all suddenly have to like pop out and be in the right brain. And
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
You know, but you know you'll do fine with it because...
Well, I just lean on you for the next 20 minutes is all.
Yeah. So you get back in the right brain.
That's right, yes.
Got it.
It's a strategy, you know.
That's fine. It's a good strategy. So we were talking about the date because it's the 18th. And
that's
it's
right.
Like, and you made a comment. It's like, oh, Christmas is almost here.
I know.
Hey, and Hanukkah starts before Christmas, so you have a few extra days.
This is true. Yeah.
But I did admit to you that I was pretty much just phoning it in this year. Seriously. Like I think I've gotten to the habit of letting things be easy. So I stress a lot less over everything being like perfect and getting everything done, but it's, you know, it just feels better that way.
Well, I got my touch on Hanukkah this year because we had some precipitation overnight that was mostly ice rather than snow, which is not real fun to get off the windshield and all that kind of thing. So we were clearing cars and getting them out of the way so they could plow the parking lot. And there's one neighbor about 4 or 5 doors over. The two of them are elderly. They both walk on walkers, and they needed to be able to get to their car. And we were saying, don't come out here. We'll clear the car for you, you know.
Yeah.
Stay there. Give us the keys so that we can get the defroster going and, you know, melt the ice and all that kind of thing. And so Louise and I cleared their car along with our own cars. And when the lady came out, she's actually the one who does most of the, you know, grocery shopping and so forth. She's more mobile than her husband is.
Mm-hmm.
When she came out, she said, I wanted to tell you both, you're both mensches. And she had to start defining what a mensch was until Louise told her, I already know what it is. Louise is half Jewish, so she'd already been apprised of what the meaning was. But we are now officially mensches for
the
holiday season.
I agree. I think you're a mensch. And for those people who don't know, it's just a really good person.
It's a really good person in Yiddish, is what.
Yes.
So anyway,
wow,
that's
got to be difficult, you know, to be not quite that as mobile, to be on a walker or crutches or anything like that and to have ice and to be dealing with. See, I never think about that too much because we don't have that kind of weather, but
yeah. Well, it is true. And I've actually had some opportunities lately to do the mind over matter thing where body is concerned, because like for like last night, after dinner, we were watching TV and Louise asked me to get something. I started to get up and my knee almost locked up because remember that ligament issue I had? It still likes to recur every once in a while. And so I have to remind myself to refocus my attention on it being a healthy knee. And I had a lot of opportunity last night to do that.
Oh.
But it's also a reminder that we need to do it ongoing, regardless of what our physical situation is, regardless of what our ages are, regardless of any of that stuff, because it literally is mind over matter. You know, and I thought about that as I was dealing with the issue, and I swear to God, I got rid of the whole thing in 5 minutes. 5 minutes later, there was nothing. It was all gone. The pain was gone.
Wow.
Everything. Yeah.
Well, that's amazing.
But it's a reminder. Well, it is amazing. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing, first of all, that I can do it at all. But it's even more amazing when you realize it doesn't really matter what your situation is. You can change it. You can change it with your mind, with what you're focusing your attention on, which is what we talk about here all the time.
Yeah.
Especially on Neville Day.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm excited about this chapter. I know you've got announcements that you want to make, but this is going to be a good one, I think.
Yes,
it is. I say that about all of them because they're all good. But
well, that makes it safe then.
Yeah.
But yes, we do have some promotional announcements, one of which is, and I'm trying to make this the message of the week, so to speak. If you are a member of Pivot Pals on Facebook, our little Facebook group devoted to doing our Neville Goddard-style vignettes of what we're trying to attract into our lives. I just want to remind you, you got to keep going back every day. That's part of the way we've got the group set up. Go back every day and, you know, review whatever it is that you posted about your vignette and, you know, just comment on it so you can mark, okay, yep, I did it today. Okay, yep, I did it today. Because that repetition makes all the difference in the world. So if you're a member of the group, please go in and you know, revisit your vignette so that you can be getting the benefit out of it. Because it's not, I mean, there are very few of these Neville stories that we hear where it's one and done. I mean, they're almost always do it one day after the next. Just keep going until you get there. And you got to do that. That's part of the process. So please do that. And by the way, if you're not a member of the group, just look for Pivot Pals, Law of Attraction Pivot Pals, on Facebook and ask to join the group. We'll be glad to let you in. It's truly one of the most positive groups in Facebook simply because it's all about supporting each other on our vignettes, which is, you know, how much more positive can you get than supporting vignettes? That's pretty good stuff. So become a Pivot Pal. Also, if you're not yet a subscriber to the podcast, we want to invite you to do that as well. Most of you are. We're really glad of that. I've been watching the averages. Oh, God, Cindy, we came within like a tick of reaching an average of 500 this week. We're going to have it by the end of the week, I'm sure of it.
Yay!
500 listeners per episode. I mean, that's pretty darn good. But for those of you who are not yet subscribers, please just go to loatoday.net, and at the top of the page, you will find instructions on exactly how to do it. It's really simple. Dan Mangano, who's doing the Tuesday show with Alex King and I now, tells me that he did it in one click. That's the current record, one click. So if it works for you in one click, it probably will in most cases. If it doesn't, it may take two or three, but it'll get you there really quick. And then you have all the episodes coming streaming right to your phone, except on Christmas and New Year's, which is coming up in a week and 2 weeks, which means this is the last Neville Day of 2019. I mean, that's hard to believe.
Oh, my goodness. I know.
You know? Holy cow. Right. Where did the year go? I will say there's one of the good sides to this, though. I'm not normally one who's into numerology or anything like that, but I'm feeling really good about the year 2020. And I'll tell you two reasons why. First, 2020, we associate that with vision, right? 2020 vision.
Right.
And I'm associating that with the year. I'm saying this is going to be a very, very big year for clarity for all of us. I think we're going to achieve levels of clarity we had never achieved before. And I really do feel that. This is not something I'm just saying. I'm feeling like down to the depths of my soul that that's going to happen. So just wanted to give you like forewarning. 2020 is going to be a really good year, folks. Just letting you know.
It's funny that you say that. Well, it's not funny. It's just a synchronicity because before the show, I was thinking, I had that thought. It was like 2020 is what we, you know, that 2020 vision is clear, perfect vision. And I had that same thought. I thought, you know, I think I even feel clear about next year right now. And that's not always the case. A lot of times at the end of the year, I'm looking forward to the next year and I'm kind of figuring it out, wondering, you know, what goals I'm going to set or what I'm going to plan for next year. And this year, I have a real sense of clarity about next year. And maybe that is true for everyone. That would be great. I love that.
Yeah, I think it is going to be true. Well, actually put it this way. If I think it's going to be true, it's going to be true. That's the way it works.
Well, clarity is so important. I mean, there is a power in being really clear about something.
Mm.
You know, because the opposite of that is confusion.
No kidding.
Or not being certain about something. And it's like, I guess I see this so much as a coach, because when I'm helping somebody figure something out, and suddenly it gets so clear, whatever it is, where they're like, oh, yes, that is it. this is it. This is what I'm going to do or say or whatever. And they're suddenly so clear, they immediately, there's a sense of empowerment there.
Right.
So, wow, it'd be fantastic for next year to have a sense of clarity all the way through the year. I'll buy that.
Well, it gives me reason to get through the next couple of weeks with Christmas and New Year's so I can get back to finding out what happens in this Neville Goddard book we've been studying.
Right?
You know?
It'll be January 8th. So it's like, and I think that today, I actually think it might be today. I think it's my 2-year anniversary with the podcast.
Is it today?
I think so.
I know it's December. I thought it might have been earlier, but maybe. You may be right. I don't remember for sure.
I can't remember either. I have to look it up. But I know it's, you know, we're there. So that's exciting, too.
Well, anyway, I look at it. Thank you for being with me here on the podcast for the last 2 years. Happy anniversary to the two of us for doing the podcast, Rick, for a couple years together now.
And also, 10 years ago today was the day I opened my email, and I had an email telling me that I had passed my coaching certification exam.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I passed it with a 99%, and I was told by one of the instructors that no one had ever gotten 100. So does that mean I passed with the highest grade possible?
I just have to ask you, are you one of these people who took it again and got 99 again and couldn't understand what the one was she got wrong?
They didn't tell me what the 1% was, and it was a grueling exam. It took hours, you know, so I was very happy to have that at the time. I had been coaching about a year when I decided to go get my certification, and I commuted from Louisiana to Texas for a year.
Wow.
And it was a big commitment, and so it's so funny. At some point in the past year, I accidentally kind of came across the email from 10 years ago.
Wow.
And so I made note of the date of the email and put it in my calendar, and then I forgot all about it. And today when I woke up, I had a reminder. It said, 10 years ago, you got the email that you passed your coaching certification. So, yeah. So, folks, I've been doing this a long time.
I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting way to establish your credentials, too. You have a story to go along with it. That's pretty good.
Right? That's it. All right. Well, we have been working our way through Neville Goddard's book, Seed Time and Harvest.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, the past couple podcasts, Walt and I kept pushing a couple of these books to the bottom of the list because they were the ones that had the most religious references. And we were like, oh. And then we got to where we only had two books that we hadn't read. So we said, let's just go ahead and do it. We've kind of cracked the Neville code.
I think so.
And we know what he's talking about most of the time now when he goes off on a tangent using any kind of verses from the Christian Bible. And so we've decided that it would be incomplete if we didn't cover all the books.
Absolutely.
So we're on chapter 4, and the title of the chapter intrigued me because it's called The Scale of Being.
Yeah.
And I'm very interested in what this chapter is about. So he starts with a verse from Genesis that says, "And he dreamed, and behold, a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven. And behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it." Then he says, "In a dream, in a vision of the night, when a deep sleep fell upon Jacob, his inner eye was opened, and he beheld the world as a series of ascending and descending levels of awareness. It was a revelation of the deepest insight into the mysteries of the world. Jacob saw a vertical scale of ascending and descending values or states of consciousness. This gave meaning to everything in the outer world, for without such a scale of values, there would be no meaning to life." So I think it's interesting that Neville kind of speaks really matter-of-factly about this.
Mm-hmm.
And the verse that he read, though, just says that he that Jacob dreamed and he saw a ladder.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Reaching into heaven with angels ascending and descending. And so then Neville says, you know, Jacob saw a vertical scale of ascending and descending values or states of consciousness. I'm like, okay.
Sure, yeah. I went out for a pint of milk, came back, and saw a whole bunch of levels of consciousness. Sure. Right.
But I like it. So Neville says, at every moment of time, man stands upon the eternal scale of meaning. There is no object or event that has ever taken place or is taking place now that is without significance. Mm-hmm. The significance of an object or event for the individual is a direct index to the level of his consciousness. You are holding this book, for example, on one level of consciousness. It is an object in space. On a higher level, it is a series of letters on paper arranged according to a certain rules. On a still higher level, it is an expression of meaning.
Ah, now it's becoming clearer.
Mm-hmm. Looking outwardly, you see the book first, but actually, the meaning comes first. It occupies a higher grade of significance than the letter arrangement on paper or the book as an object in space. Meaning determined the arrangement of letters. The arrangement of letters only expresses the meaning. The meaning is invisible and above the level of the visible arrangement of letters. If there had been no meaning to be expressed, no book would have been written and published. And then he quotes, and behold, the Lord stood above it. The Lord and meaning are one, the creator, the cause of the phenomena of life. Now, we've talked about this before. Remember that Neville often says the Lord is our consciousness.
Right.
Now, he's also saying the Lord and meaning, and that without any meaning, the book would, and certainly that makes perfect sense, right? That without meaning, without some reason, the book wouldn't have been written.
Well, it's also an interesting observation, because if we take it as a perfect equality, then we can literally say that the Lord equals meaning equals consciousness. So consciousness is meaning.
Interesting.
Yeah, we never really think about consciousness as meaning, but that's right. it makes sense, because without consciousness, like he's saying, there's no delineation of what's more of value to us or what's less of value to us. And without that, meaning kind of disappears.
Well, and it's important. One of the things that as coaches, you know, we talk about is what we make things mean. Like, things only have the meaning that we give them.
Yes.
And I thought it was interesting where he says, actually, the meaning comes first. And I think in more ways than one, he's talking about without that meaning, the thing wouldn't have been written. The letters arranged on the page, there would be no reason for it. But also when we look at the book, like we look at a book on our bookshelf, and immediately I'm looking above my head, right above me, there's a bookshelf. And when I look up there at those books, I mean, certain books up there have more value to me than others, right?
Sure.
I look at them and I'm like, oh, that was an excellent book. Eh, that one. So I've already assigned levels of value, which is what, you know, Neville is mentioning here. I think it's really interesting. He says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. John 1:1. He says, in the beginning was the intention, the meaning. And the intention was with the intender, and the intention was the intender. The objects and events in time and space occupy a lower level of significance than the level of meaning which produced them. All things were made by meaning, and without meaning was not anything made that was made. The fact that everything seen can be regarded as the effect on a lower level of significance of an unseen higher order of significance is a very important one to grasp. Okay, so because he's saying this is important, I want to stop here for a second and just think about what he's saying.
Mm-hmm, sure.
I like this, that the levels of significance, because he's saying that the physical objects have a lower level of significance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that the level of meaning which produced those objects is the higher level of significance.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Well,
I'll take a step further on this because I mentioned to you before the podcast that I've spent literally all week, not just all day, on programming, and that programming was something I kind of left behind, and I swore I'd never go back to it, and now here I am back to it. But as I've been working on it, I've become, you become very aware of the thing that you're working on, right? Especially if it's an older skill. You become really aware of all the aspects of it, and that's what's happening with me as well. One of the things that we talk about as programmers is higher-level languages versus lower-level languages.
Mm-hmm.
A lower-level language would be something like a computer language that was all done in zeros and ones, which would be incomprehensible to a human being. A higher-level language would be something that would take words and phrases and translate them into zeros and ones. That's a higher-level language. And indeed, most people who program like to use the highest-level languages because it's quick. We use words for a very good reason. They're like little encapsulations of meaning. So instead of having to, basically diagram every single detail of a scene, we can capture a scene in a few words because each of those words encapsulates a whole bunch of different meanings. You put them all together and it kind of paints a picture mm-hmm. that way pretty quickly. It's kind of like painting with a broad brush instead of with a little tiny detail brush. So when he's talking about higher level and lower level of meaning, that's what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about the level of detail. Higher level, it's sort of an encapsulated meaning. Lower level, it's all the little dots and dashes and all that make up that higher level meaning that we're talking about.
So there's spell it out.
Yeah, spell it out, yeah. So there's a direct correlation, I think, going on to what he's talking about regarding the higher or lower levels of meaning and words on a page and so forth, and computer programming. Computer programming is almost like a metaphor for today's chapter.
It is, and I think that's amazing. Like, when you were saying that, I was thinking, oh my God, we've done it again.
That's right.
Right, we've done it again. Okay, so let's see. I want to make sure I didn't skip anything. I kind of moved my screen around here. Okay, so our usual mode of procedure is to attempt to explain the higher levels of significance, why things happen, in terms of the lower, what and how things happen, which is exactly what you were just doing.
Right.
For example, he says, let us take an actual accident and try to explain it. Most of us live on the level of what happened. The accident was an event in space. One automobile struck another and practically demolished it. Some of us live on the higher level of how the accident happened. It was a rainy night, the roads were slippery, and the second car skidded into the first. On rare occasions, a few of us reach the highest or causal level of why such an accident occurs. Then we become aware of the invisible, the state of consciousness which produced the visible event. In this case, the ruined car was driven by a widow who, though she felt she could not afford to, greatly desired to change her environment. Having heard that, by the proper use of her imagination, she could do and be all she wished to be, this widow had been imagining herself actually living in the city of her desire. At the same time, she was living in a consciousness of loss, both personal and financial. Therefore, she brought upon herself an event which was seemingly another loss, but the sum of money the insurance company paid her allowed her to make the desired change in her life. When we see the why behind the seeming accident, the state of consciousness that produced the accident, we are led to the conclusion that there is no accident. Everything in life has its invisible meaning. The man who learns of an accident, the man who knows how it happened, and the man who knows why it happened are on three different levels of awareness in regard to that accident. On the ascending scale, each higher level carries us a step in advance toward the truth of the accident. We should strive constantly to lift ourselves to the higher level of meaning, the meaning that is always invisible and above the physical event. But remember, the meaning or cause of the phenomena of life can be found only within the consciousness of man. But I think something's interesting here, and that is, it's not the word meaning, but sometimes you hear people say that everything happens for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I always disagree. I think that everything can have a purpose and that we can give purpose to anything that's happened.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's different than thinking everything has a reason. But what Neville's saying here about the why and the meaning and that consciousness produced it, that's an interesting, you know, there's a lot of debate about this right now in a lot of law of attraction circles.
Mm-hmm.
So when something happens like an accident,
yes,
did someone, you know, bring it on themselves, so to speak?
And I'm glad to hear Neville discussing it, to be perfectly honest. I mean, most of his stories are about how well things work out.
Right.
But here he's telling a story where he points out that, what was his words? At the time, she was living in a consciousness of loss, both personal and financial. I mean, that's hitting the nail on the head. She was living in that space, and so that's what she was attracting.
What's interesting, though, is that there were two things going on, because he says that she had recognized that she could change her geographical experience, her location,
right,
her whatever life experience by imagining.
Mm-hmm.
So that she was consciously doing that as well.
Yep.
But he says, but she was living in a consciousness of loss and lack, right? Is that what it said? I'm not on my page.
Consciousness of loss, both personal and financial, yes.
Okay, loss, both personal and financial. So that's really the first time I think that I've heard this juxtaposition of the two things, not just one or the other.
Yeah.
Not just, well, you have a lack consciousness or a scarcity consciousness, so that's why these things are happening. Or you've put yourself in this place where you can imagine impossible things and now the impossible begins possible and things start happening. But this is a combination of the two that he's talking about.
And he concludes that the result is a combination of the two. That she brought upon herself an event which was seemingly another loss, but the sum of money the insurance company paid her allowed her to make the desired change in her life, which, by the way, was an incredibly familiar tale to me.
Well, it reminds me of the good luck, bad luck story.
It does, yeah.
Right? And so it's like, I have learned, and I'm not, you know, totally thinking that every single thing is that comes upon someone that is considered bad luck, that is something that's uncomfortable, something that's, I am not one of these people who blames the victim. I think that's a problem in the community with blaming the victim. However, I do think it's interesting, this juxtaposition of ideas, because I think that's where most of us are most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that... Right? I think that that's why we talk so much about focus and being focused and being able to really focus in on something, because most of the time we have a diffused focus. Most of the time we have a certain consciousness that may be a poverty consciousness or a lack consciousness at the same time that we're trying to focus on other things, and we get mixed results.
Absolutely. Yeah. And by the way, I agree with you about the debate about blaming the victim, because those who talk about blaming the victim really are missing the point entirely. Blame has no role in this at all, unless you choose to bring it in. But in terms of the way the mechanism works, it really does not have any necessary role at all to play. It's either, you know, I focused on what I felt was good, or I focused on what I felt was bad. There's not a blame involved at all.
Well, and I think one of the best things we can do with this kind of situation is something that my family does all the time, and that is that we got a hold of the good luck, bad luck story, and it's a short story. If you don't know it, it's a proverb of an old Chinese farmer that only owned one horse, and a very poor farmer was the only horse he had to help him with his work, and the horse ran away, and all the neighbors said, oh, what, that's bad luck. And he said, oh, good luck, bad luck, who knows? Week later, the horse comes back with a dozen beautiful wild stallions. What did the neighbors say? Oh, what good luck. He said, oh, good luck, bad luck, who knows? A week later, his son is trying to break one of the wild stallions, and he gets thrown off the horse and breaks his leg. Oh, what bad luck, the neighbors say. Oh, good luck, bad luck, who knows? The whole province goes to war. All the young men have to go fight, but the son is spared because his leg is broken. Good luck. It could go on forever, right?
Right.
But in our family, whenever something, you know, less than wonderful happens, we have a tendency to look at each other and say, good luck, bad luck. Who knows? Mm-hmm. And I think it's a wonderful way to navigate things in life that don't feel that great. Things that we weren't expecting. Things that we, you know, didn't consciously create. Good luck, bad luck.
I think it's one of the reasons you and I have talked about prefer and not prefer rather than good or bad. You know, yeah. I like or I don't like, not I'm against or I'm in favor of. You know, not no moralistic side to it, because the moralism just gets in the way.
But on top of that,
also, this whole story about a woman, a widow, who gets into a car accident and ends up with what she wanted through monetary compensation from the insurance company really hits close to home, because that is exactly what happened to Louise and me. That's how we ended up having our wedding paid for, by getting into a traffic accident at a time when we were just talking about getting married, and I was trying to figure out, how the heck am I going to pay for this? And whack, okay, yeah. I'm going to have to work on this.
I can say something similar. Yeah, I think we've all been there. Okay, so he says the man who learns of an accident, the man who knows how it happened, and the man who knows why it happened are on three different levels of awareness in regard to the accident. On the ascending scale, each higher level carries us a step in advance toward the truth of the accident. We should strive constantly to lift ourselves to the higher level of meaning, the meaning that is always invisible and above the physical event. But remember, the meaning or cause of the phenomena of life can be found only within the consciousness of man. Man is so engrossed in the visible side of the drama of life, the side of what has happened and how it happened, but he rarely rises to the invisible side of why it happened. He refuses to accept the prophet's warning that things which are seen were not made of things that do appear. His descriptions of what has happened and how it happened are true in terms of his corresponding level of thought. But when he asks why it happened, all physical explanations break down, and he is forced to seek the why or meaning of it on the invisible and higher level.
Mm-hmm. What we were talking about.
The mechanical analysis of events deals only with external relationships of things. Such a course will never reach the level which holds the secret of why the events happen. Man must recognize that the lower and visible sides flow from the invisible and higher level of meaning. Intuition is needed to lift us up to the level of meaning, to the level of why things happen. Let us follow the advice of the Hebrew prophet of old and lift up our eyes unto the hills within ourselves and observe what is taking place there. See what ideas we have accepted as true, what states we have consented to, what dreams, what desires, and above all, what intentions. It's from these hills that all things come to reveal our stature, our height, on the vertical scale of meaning. If we lift our eyes to the thee in me who works behind the veil, we will see the meaning of the phenomena of life.
Let me interrupt you for a second there, because there's a word he used that I want to highlight. He says, see what ideas we've accepted as true, what states we have consented to, what dreams, what desires, and above all, what intentions. Mm-hmm. Intentions is the word that I want to underline, because so often we in the conscious creator, deliberate creator circles talk about, you know, what our words are going to be and what our emotions are going to be and all that kind of stuff. And, well, I was doing my affirmations every day and I got the wrong result and this happened and that happened and so on and so forth. But what was the intention going on during all of that? There's an intention that happens in the background, and we don't pay a lot of attention to it, but that attention's driving the truck.
What stood out to me in that paragraph was the states that we've consented to.
Yeah.
There's an idea that whatever we have, we, you know, look around, whatever we've got going on in our experience is, you know, you could say here, we've consented to it. The idea that I've heard before is that we had an unconscious commitment to.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And so when Neville talks about using intuition, he says intuition is needed to lift us up to the level of meaning. That really strikes a chord with me, because so often that's exactly it is. Once we start pondering why, mm-hmm. why did this happen? You know, we know the what and the how, like he said, but it's the why. When we get there and we start pondering within ourself, what state was I in? What mm-hmm. was my intention? Mm-hmm. Oftentimes our intuition brings us the answer.
It does.
And we realize,
to our dismay.
Right, like you said, I got to work on this. Uh-oh, I made an intention that I needed money to pay for the wedding. I think I need to work on how this happened.
And the intention was literally not one of, oh, I'm sure I know where the money's going to come from. It was more like, oh, God, where is the money going to come from?
Well, I know. I had an experience that a couple of years ago, you'll remember, because it was, there was a big, big flood in our state, in our city. But we live high up, so it wasn't going to get us that way. But what happened was water somehow got into the subflooring of our house. So it's like it seeped up through the bottom. And yeah. my wood floors of my house were like a skate park. And I did a lot of pondering about the why. And I did have some intuitive hits about why this came to pass. And it had to do with intentions, and they were combined with the state I was in, right? So it's like, oh, this is very interesting.
We often wonder why it is we're not getting enough feedback about what it is our intentions are, what intentions we're trying to put out there. But we're getting feedback all the time. It's just we often are ignoring some of it. We don't want to know what some of the feedback was.
Right. Or because like you said, the feedback is here.
Yeah.
Like, look around. That's the feedback. And so often we're in a very low level of energy that's a victim consciousness energy. Mm. And when we see these things that we consider, you know, bad things or things that happen to us, we don't want to take responsibility for them. And it's hard to take responsibility for them when we're in that level of consciousness. So when that's one of the most important things I think we can do is to take what I call radical responsibility. And that's just pretend it was your responsibility, if that's the best we can do. Sometimes just write the story. What if you actually planned all this? Why did you plan it? You know, that triggers the intuition to start figuring it out. And then we can dig in and see why. Oh, because I totally been living in a lack consciousness, and yet I was making intentions to get out of here. So the car got wrecked. I mean, becomes clearer, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Jeffrey's listening in on the live stream as we're recording this, and he says, I appreciate clarity and focus and synchronicity, tying that back a little bit to what we were talking about earlier. But it's also a kind of a reminder. Yes, that's great stuff to appreciate. Of course, it's also good to appreciate all of it, because we do have a tendency to be a little select. I appreciate this one. I don't appreciate that one so much.
Yes. Picking and choosing. Right.
That's right.
Yeah. Neville says, events appear on the screen of space to express the different levels of consciousness of man. A change in the level of his consciousness automatically results in a change of the phenomena of his life. This is exactly what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about, you want to see the feedback? Look around.
That's right. Right?
Here it is. Neville's calling that the screen of space. Look around. to attempt to change conditions before he changes the level of consciousness from whence they came is to struggle in vain. Man redeems the world as he ascends the vertical scale of meaning. You know, question, with Neville saying to attempt to change conditions before he changes the level of consciousness, reminds me of this story that he's just told of the accident.
Mm-hmm.
The woman was attempting to change her conditions.
Right.
But hadn't changed the level of consciousness yet. So exactly. She did get a change of conditions, but it came in a way that was aligned with her consciousness of lack,
I think,
or loss.
There's an important reminder in here, too. I think one very clear way to read Neville is to recognize he's not saying that you should never try to change your conditions. He's saying specifically change your conditions as you change what you're focusing your attention on, as you change your imagination. Do them both. Do them in concert. I think a lot of people I've seen this also in the groups, a lot of people getting all worked up about, oh, well, you're just doing all this doing. You should be only imagining. Don't do anything but imagine.
No,
it's both.
Life on Earth doesn't work that way.
That's
and
right.
the way I always think about that with people is I go, do you get up in the morning and, like, walk out of your room? Do you put your clothes on? Do you get in a car? Do you drive to work? Like, all of those things are taking action.
They certainly are.
Right? Yeah.
And they should not be rejected.
You pay your bills, or you pay them online digitally, or you go to the grocery store and push a cart around and put things in it, or do you just wake up in the morning and the breakfast floats on in? Like, how?
Which is possible. I'm not saying that it's not possible for that to happen, but in my experience, and I think in most people's experience, if what you're wanting is to have a really robust, abundant life where you're experiencing all this kind of stuff, if the abundance isn't going to come in a big way when you're sitting on the couch all day. Because it's all got to come through the door. It's got to fit in through all the tiny cracks in your life. And I'm sitting on the couch. I'm waiting for the abundance to show up. Why hasn't the abundance showed up?
I love the idea that, you know, if you're focused enough and powerful enough with your intentions, that you probably can go to McDonald's and have a 5-star meal, but it's so much easier to just go to a 5-star
restaurant. Yes, really. Besides, the atmosphere is better.
So Neville says, we saw in the analogy of the book, which I really like that analogy, right? That a book is an object in space, and that on a higher level, we've got words in there, and even higher level, there's meaning. We saw in the analogy of the book that as consciousness was lifted up to the level where a man could see meaning expressed in the arrangement of its letters, it also included the knowledge that the letters were arranged according to certain rules, and that such arrangements, when printed on paper and bound together, formed a book. What is true of the book is true of every event in the world. He quotes from Isaiah, "They shall not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea." Remember here that Neville always uses the Lord as consciousness. And then in this particular chapter, he says the Lord is meaning.
Right.
So they shall not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the meaning as the waters covers the sea. Nothing is to be discarded. All is to be redeemed. Our lives ascending the vertical scale of meaning towards an ever-increasing awareness, an awareness of things of higher significance, are the process whereby this redemption is brought to pass. So think about what he's saying here. Our lives, our lives are the process.
Yes.
And he says nothing is to be discarded. All is to be redeemed. So we've been talking about the words that we use to describe things, and that we both prefer to say something is uncomfortable or comfortable rather than good or bad, preferred or not preferred,
right,
instead of judging it. Neville's saying, don't throw anything out. It's all part of your life, and your life is the process.
And I agree with that. The thing about preferring and not preferring, it doesn't mean to say I don't have any of the not preferred in my life. I got lots of not preferred in my life.
Well, we all do.
Yeah. The point isn't to avoid the not preferred. The point is to attract more of the preferred.
Well, sure. And also, the point isn't to avoid the non-preferred. It's to redeem it.
To redeem it. Well, it all gets redeemed.
Right.
What a redemption is does it become a part of your life? That's a redemption.
Or it turns into something good.
Or, yeah, it could even...
Or something you prefer.
It could be that, too, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
But part of it is just accepting, you know, there's some stuff I don't like in life. Okay, you know, am I going to let it ruin my day?
No. It you're going to redeem it and recognize that you're going to give it some purpose. Mm-hmm. So Neville says, as man arranges letters into words and words into sentences to express meaning, in like manner, life arranges circumstances, conditions, and events to express the unseen meanings or attitudes of man. Nothing is without significance. But man, not knowing the higher level of inner meaning, looks out upon a moving panorama of events and sees no meaning to life. There is always a level of meaning determining events and their essential relationship to our lives. All right. He says, here's a story that will enable us to seize the good in things seeming evil, to withhold judgment, and to act aright amid unsolved problems.
Ah, so, okay.
This is right to enable to seize the good in things seeming evil. I think that's redemption.
Yes.
All right. Let's see what story he tells us, because this is from decades ago. Just a few years ago, our country was shocked by a seeming injustice in our midst. The story was told on radio and television, as well as in the newspapers. You may recall the incident. The body of a young American soldier killed in Korea was returned to his home for burial. Just before the service, his wife was asked a routine question. Was her husband a Caucasian? When she replied that he was an Indian, burial was refused. This refusal was in accordance with the laws of that community, but it aroused the entire nation. We felt incensed that anyone who had been killed in the service of his country should be denied burial anywhere in his country. The story reached the attention of the President of the United States, and he offered burial with full military honors in Arlington National Cemetery. After the service, the wife told reporters that her husband had always dreamed of dying a hero and having a hero's burial service with full military honors. Mm-hmm. When we in America had to explain why progressive, intelligent people like ourselves not only enacted but supported such laws in our great land of the free and the brave, we were hard put for an explanation. We, as observers, had seen only what happened and how it happened. We failed to see the why it happened. That burial had to be refused if that lad was to realize his dream. We tried to explain the drama in terms of the lower level of how it happened, which explanation could not satisfy the one who had asked why it happened. The true answer, viewed from the level of higher meaning, would be such a reversal of our common habits of thinking that it would be instantly rejected. The truth is that future states are causative of present facts. The Indian boy dreaming of a hero's death with full military honors was like Lady Macbeth transported beyond this ignorant present and could feel now the future in the instant. Wow.
That's an interesting story.
Right? Well, what I think is interesting is that he says here that about the future and the past.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Where is it? Future states are causative of present facts.
Right.
That's like time travel.
It is.
Right?
It is. It's like time travel. It's discussing a form of time thought travel. I mean, in that sense, it definitely is time travel. And even more than that, it's about higher level travel versus lower level travel.
I think the other thing that story, I didn't know what the story was going to be. And I was thinking it was a different story. But stories that we have through history of injustices like that often become, you know, how he talks about the nation was upset about it. They often become the catalyst for civil changes, right? For that maybe, you know, stem from an injustice, but they were the thing that got everything moving and made people aware that changes needed to be made, and then changes happen. So in that way, sometimes those things also can be redeemed. It's not that the incidents themselves are always comfortable or right even or good, but that they were necessary for changes to be made that turned out to be good or right or comfortable or whatever. So I think there's that way of looking at it as well.
I think that's exactly right. In fact, I think we can apply the same principle, the same approach to modern day events. There are a number of events going on today, a number of different situations that people are finding very, very uncomfortable, particularly here in the United States, but also in other places around the world. There are a number of things going on that are just very, very uncomfortable. And in all of them, if we can just take a step back, I try to do this routinely, if we can just take a step back and ask ourselves, okay, I may not be able to see what the why is, because like he said, I mean, the why could be coming from a future event that hasn't happened yet, so I don't know what it is, right?
Wow.
But if I can just kind of take a step back, I can kind of see in all of these situations going on, there's like a whirlpool, like a vortex, to use Abraham's term. There's a vortex of stuff going on. And you can just kind of imagine how, knowing what we know about the law of attraction, there's going to be good stuff coming out of that.
Well, that's what I was just going to say is that, you know, what's interesting is we have two stories here. One was very much kind of the micro story, the woman that gets in the wreck. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure when you get in a wreck, more than one life is affected in some way, right?
Oh, absolutely, sure.
Everything, you know, it's the butterfly effect, right? But this woman that had an intention and, you know, this thing that happened that seemed to be something bad happened to her, a wreck, and it turns out that it afforded her a way to make that change. Okay, then we go to the next story, this story that, like, more people were involved in because it was publicized and it was the president, you know, just made a decision concerning it. Right. So it was like a whole nation, maybe more than one nation, were looking at it and unhappy about it. And yet it was his dream to be a hero. It was back down to the kind of micro level, right? It's like It was this one person's dream that a certain thing would be a certain way, his burial. And because of that, this big thing happened. Well, I'm going like the next step in thinking about our collective consciousness in the world, that we're all desiring certain things.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
The things that we're desiring. We're desiring justice. We're desiring equality. We're desiring certain things. And it looks at times like, oh my goodness, it's just not happening. Everything is going in the wrong direction. You know, I can see people saying that. And yet maybe this is, like you said, it's the why.
Mm-hmm.
This is, like Neville said, part of the process. Maybe this is the process.
That's
and
right.
So if we'll keep our eyes there and go good luck, bad luck, which has been incredibly difficult for some of us to do. I admit, me, raising my hand, difficult to do. Recognizing that we don't know the end of the process.
Well, plus also, he doesn't directly address it, but he indirectly addresses it with both of these stories. In any micro situation, any up close situation, there's more than one set of attentions involved. Like, for instance,
yeah.
I mentioned Louise and I had that traffic accident that I ended up paying for our funeral. So that was an unintended consequence that actually worked out really well. I said funeral, didn't I? For wedding. The other kind of wedding. But the point is that, you know, that was a very unexpected intention, and it played out the way it needed to. But the same thing happened with the person who hit us, because it was the other person's fault. It was basically my wife, and the thing that was really freaking me out is it was the first time my wife ever drove my car that I had just bought.
Imagine it freaked her out too.
Oh yeah, so you can imagine how I felt about it too. But
yeah.
I found out indirectly, because I didn't have a direct conversation with him, but I overheard the son of the woman who hit us at the hospital while she and I were in line waiting to get x-rayed. The son made a comment to somebody on the phone with his mother in hearing distance saying, well, we've been wanting her to give up driving. Now she's going to have to do it.
Oh, wow.
And she managed to do it without anyone being seriously hurt. I mean, we all had some minor injuries, but nobody's got seriously hurt.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So my point is there's an example of how there were two sets of things going on that were really not connected at all directly.
Right.
You know, but they got indirectly connected through this common event. And any event is going to have a whole series of these things associated with every single participant in that event.
Well, and we've also talked about how much our intentions for a situation affect other people.
That's right.
And
here
you have this, the children making an intention that they don't want their mother driving, and then that's the outcome.
Yeah.
That does turn out to be a good outcome, but in the moment, finding out your parents been in a wreck, when you've already, you know, recognized you don't want them driving.
Oh, by the way, the ultimate irony of this, not only did it pay for our wedding, but the reason that this woman caused the accident was she was coming one way, we were going the other way on a 45-mile-per-hour highway. No other cars in sight. Ooh. She pulls in front of us and stops in our lane because she wanted to check to make sure she was in the right place for the wedding that she was attending. So weddings just played this huge role in the whole thing.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Yeah.
That's what a story.
Yeah,
and it's perfect for today's chapter. It's exactly right.
The ripple effect is just amazing. Yeah. I mean, it's often hard to follow the ripple effect because we don't know what always happens in other people's lives. Rarely do we know. But on those occasions where we can actually follow the threads, so to speak, or the threads, because there's multiple threads, it just becomes incredibly amazing how source energy is able to just kind of flow everything together to make it work into this great big dance that produces outcomes for everybody involved. It's like, wow, how on earth does this happen? This is incredible.
Yeah. It's amazing. It really is. It really is amazing. And to me, it's always just proof that we're all connected.
Yes.
Right? When it's not even my actions that affect other people, but my intentions.
Yes.
To watch that happen.
That's a reminder. I mean, we really want to be very, very selective about what our intentions are. Not out of guilt, not out of, oh, God, I don't dare do anything because I might hurt somebody.
Right, not simply, out of fear.
Not out of fear,
no.
But simply out of, what's the life I really want to live? What's the life I desire the most? What's the one that I really want to focus my attention on? And to be especially aware of all those times when I am focusing my attention on what I don't want life to be, which I do much more often than I should, although I do it a lot less than I did before, and I'm very happy to say that.
Right. We're all getting better.
We're getting much better.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that practice is so important for this reason, because the ripple effect just goes on and on and on. I think
I remember it reminds me of another one of my favorite old-timey teachers, Florence Scovel Shinn. She said once something like, you know, if we really understood how powerful our words were, we would be much more careful about what we said.
This is true.
And I think that that's true of, you know, you were talking about intention throughout the chapter. And when we have an intention that becomes strong enough, it does usually become words. We do start speaking about it. You know, even like these people just saying, oh, we really don't want our mom to be driving, right? I'm sure they said that out loud to each other, to whoever. And this woman that really wanted to move to another place, I'm sure she said it at some time. It's like, I'm sick of this place. I really want to get out of here, right?
Exactly.
Because when we have intentions, so that's another way we know what our intentions are, is just pay attention to the things that you're saying. Pay attention to the stories that you're telling. That's how you know what your intentions are. You know, you can say you intend one thing, but it's also going to show up in the rest of your language that's just all day long, not, right? I told a story to a client recently that I had coached, this was years ago, maybe 5 years ago. In a week, I had coached several young women. And they had all mentioned the same thing, that they wanted to feel safe. They wanted to feel safe in a relationship. And it seemed like a common thread that was weaving its way through, you know, these coaching sessions. So I had that on my mind, and I was out riding my bicycle around the lakes that night. And I was just thinking about, you know, the sessions that I'd been coaching the week and the things that had been happening. And all of a sudden I noticed people, and many of them were the lakes around the college, so many of them were college-age young women, riding bikes without helmets, driving their car while they're looking at their phone, right? And I said, so these people are saying to me, I want to be safe. But the message they're sending out the rest of the time to the universe in their body language and in their actions was that they really don't care too much about safety.
Yeah, that's true.
So we have to be aware of what we're putting out there all the time. That shows us what our intentions are.
As usual, these things all dovetail together. And I get Mike Dooley's notes from the universe. And today's note was absolutely perfect to what we're talking about. So I want to read it to you. Mike Dooley, for those who aren't sure, that he's one of the presenters in The Secret. He's the one who said thoughts become things, in case you're trying to place where you might be in that movie. But Mike says, if you knew for absolutely, now in this case, in these notes from the universe, he's speaking as if he were the universe, so you have to kind of take it in that context. But he says, if you knew for absolute certain that every little thing you did today would later be scrutinized literally moment by moment by a future you and future friends, as well as anyone else interested, and you'd all be looking for a number of qualities, especially patience and kindness and love, during this game of games and tests of tests called life. How might you treat the very next person you see after reading this note? Food for thought.
It's good stuff. Yep. That's really what we're talking about.
Absolutely. So, yeah, well, I mean, this has been great. I'm the only sad part is we got 3 weeks we have to wait before we can do the next chapter in the book.
I know.
But it's going to be good.
It's going to go by fast. The holidays will be here, and they'll be gone before you know it.
They do fly by, don't they? Before we go, tell people how to reach out to Cindy Chavez, the life coach.
You can find me online at my website, cindychavez.com, CindyChavez. I hope you will come see me, and I hope you have a wonderful holiday season and a happy new year, because I won't see you until next year. So.
Absolutely. Well, we hope you do the same, and that it's just a season of love and safety and happiness.
Thank you, yes.
All the great things that you're looking for most in your life. So we wish them all to you. Thank you to our live streamers, especially also to our podcast listeners as well. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.